I'll be reading Matthew 9:19-21. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroys, and where thieves break in and steal. But store up yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth or rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and or steal. For where your treasure is, where your heart will be also.
Good morning. We're delighted to have you here today, especially if you're visiting with us. We are studying the book of Matthew, and our text today was just read for us. And this is where we were in our discussion in class this morning, too. We had a great discussion. I hope you're finding benefit to our lesson from the pulpit and our Bible discussion and study on Sunday mornings and Wednesday evenings, kind of all being together. I know it helps me a lot to stay focused, so I'm certainly appreciating that. Have you ever heard about how to catch a monkey? You've probably heard this before, but to catch a monkey, I've been told, now I've never done this, apparently it worked well in Iowa because I can't find any loose monkeys. Whether or not that actually happened here, I don't know. You tell me. I'm not originally from Iowa, but they say that if you want to catch a monkey, all you need to do is take something, what I was told is, for example, like a coconut. And drill a hole in that coconut large enough for the monkey to be able to put his hand in it. But put some food in that coconut that would attract the monkey. A banana, a peanut, something like that. And you throw that out there where the monkeys roam. You know, you've got to be where they roam because you're trying to catch them. They're loose, remember? And what happens is when that monkey reaches into that coconut to grab that peanut or whatever you might have put in there to attract them, you can run up and grab them or actually tie a string to that coconut and just pull them in. Because when they stick their hand in that hole and make a fist to grab that peanut, it's too big then if you did the hole right, okay? It's too big to pull their fist out unless they let go of that peanut. Well, that monkey wants that peanut or whatever it is that you put in there so bad, they won't let go even under the threat of you, the big monkey catcher, coming to grab the monkey. And people use that story all the time to make the point of our text today that sometimes we need to let some things go in life. You know, we're trying to grab too much. And to think about that silly little monkey holding onto that peanut, even though it meant he was going to be captured. Well, that's a silly little monkey, but listen to this story about the thief who had found a sunken ship. And on that ship was a treasure chest full of jewels. And he would dive down there when he discovered that and fill his pockets so full of jewels that he drowned. He couldn't get back up. There's too much weight in his pockets. You know, and I'm thinking, how silly, just make more trips. But again, it just, you know, it just makes the point of how greedy sometimes we can be. And it's that problem with greed and pride and lust and wanting the green stuff that Jesus is talking about here in Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 through 21, as he continues his Sermon on the Mount. 16 of the 38 parables are concerned with how to handle money and possessions. That's a lot of teaching about one particular topic. But consider this as well. In the Gospels, one out of every 10 verses deal directly with the subject of money. Now that may not seem like a lot to you, so let me put it in some other numbers here that I think make the point even clearer. The Bible offers about 500 verses on prayer. You would kind of expect that. Prayer is kind of an important thing. when you think about being a child of God, 500 verses, that's an awful lot. Less than 500 verses on faith, but there's a lot written about faith, but it isn't as much as there's written about prayer. But consider this now. There are more than 2,000 verses that address money and possessions. I was astounded by that, to think that more than twice, significantly more than twice the verses concerning prayer deal with money and the possession and our possessions. Because the Bible speaks so much about money, I think it's important for us to consider what the Bible is saying to us. And that's what this lesson is all about today. We want to think about where our treasures are, if you will. Where are our possessions? And I want to share with you a couple of verses from a song that we sang earlier this morning. When I survey the wondrous cross, song 315. I just want to read those first two verses out of this because it speaks to our lesson today. And I think it sums it up well. So maybe I should wait and read this at the end. No, I'll go ahead and read it now. When I survey the wondrous cross on which the Prince of Glory died, my richest gain I count but loss and pour contempt on my pride. I really think that's the message that I want us to take from this lesson today. As we reflect upon where our treasure is, and that's the question for us today, I hope that we'll make that assessment, if you will, with Jesus in mind. Because we can only honestly make that assessment with Jesus being focused in our hearts and in our mind. And specifically, to focus upon Him on the cross really, really brings it home. When I survey the wondrous cross on which the Prince of Glory died, my richest gain I count but loss, and pour contempt on all my pride. Forbid it, Lord, that I should boast, save in the death of Christ my Lord. All the vain things, and that's what Jesus is talking about, all those vain things that charm me most, I sacrifice them for His blood. That really says it all. We are not to lay up for ourselves treasures on earth for some very simple reasons. They don't last. And they're vulnerable. Jesus mentions that in regards to clothing, for example, moth destroys clothing. Clothing was something that was very important in the ancient world. Much like my red and white striped bell bottoms I told you about this morning. Important details are shared in Bible class, so you might have missed that. You'll have to join us. But clothing was something very important in the ancient world. A couple of passages here. Elijah's servant, remember what he wanted running after Naaman in 2 Kings chapter 5? He was asking for two changes of clothing. One of the things that Achan lusted for in Jericho was a beautiful Babylonian garment in Joshua chapter 7, about verse 21. Clothing in the ancient world, we're told, compared to certainly today, I think is very true, would never go out of style. So it was something which could easily be collected and hoarded and would always be valuable. Would always be valuable. Until, as Jesus would remind us, the moths would get to them. Jesus said another problem with amassing those treasures on the earth is that rust destroys them. Now we need to understand here that the translation here for the word rust isn't limited just to the word rust. In fact, that's probably not the best translation. The original Greek word really refers to anything that destroys. But in the context here of looking at maybe something valuable like jewelry, rust might certainly destroy that. There were several ways in which one's goods could be destroyed in the ancient world, if you think about that. For example, where would they deposit things? They're not going to go to security state bank and deposit them into a nice, safe, guarded vault that we have at our banks. Now they're going to dig a hole in the ground, maybe put it in something and bury it. Well, just the fact that they're burying it in the ground was a problem for what they might be burying. And what if, like I said this morning, what if they're like the squirrels that bury all those acorns in my yard? You know why squirrels have to bury so many acorns? Because they can't remember where they bury them. That's literally true. And so they have to bury so many of them so that they get lucky in the winter and can find something to eat. That's really true. Think about that if you're burying your stuff out in the yard and you forget where you buried it. Or worse yet, a thief sees where you buried it, where you dug your hole, waits for you to head on home, and then digs it up after you. Think about that if you're keeping it in your house. At this time, your house is nothing more than baked clay. Your neighbor could simply dig through your wall and grab your stuff. And that's exactly what happened at times. Think about those individuals who might hoard grain. What happens there? Have you ever been around a granary? What's one of the most popular critters you can find around a granary? Rats and mice. I can remember one of the funnest things that I got to do on my uncle's farm when I was growing up was to shoot the rats around the granary. Got to be a pretty good shot, too. But I remember one time the rats had gotten particularly bad. And what we realized is that they had burrowed underneath the granary and were stealing grain through the holes in the floor or gnawing through the wood in the floor so that the grain would leak down, and they were just harvesting it. So the uncle took one of the back loaders and went up there and picked up that granary and tipped it up when it was empty. And we just stood there with guns and started blasting rats. It was great. It really was. But not good for my uncle, who was the farmer, who was feeding all those fat rats. But when you hoard things like that, bad things can happen to it. As we said, thieves can break in and steal, etc. Jesus' point here is that the treasures that we accumulate here on earth are temporary. They're vulnerable. And they really don't mean as much as we think they do. Our possessions today are just as temporary as they were in Jesus' day. Fire can destroy our homes. Illness can cost us our life's savings. A nosedive in the stock market can wipe out our 401k. And the list goes on and on. Jesus, now we need to understand this too. Jesus is not condemning wealth, at least not wealth in and of itself. Money in and of itself is not wrong. 1 Timothy 6:10 says, for the love of money. It doesn't say money is the root of all evils, but it says the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Some people eager for money have wandered away from the truth and pierced themselves with many griefs. Now, on the other side of that, we are commanded to use our money wisely, to provide for our needs and the needs of our families. 1 Timothy 5:8 makes this very plain or very clear. Why don't we turn there? 1 Timothy 5:8. This is a passage that introduced to me. I don't know how I want to say it. Took on a lot of meaning to me when my father-in-law lost a rather large sum of money in a bad investment. You know, it used to be, and I don't know if there still is or not, but there used to be a lot of folks in the Brotherhood that were trying to make investments for preachers, for example. And unfortunately, a lot of those investments went bad for lots of different reasons. And my father-in-law got involved in one of those and gave a lot of money to a gentleman who was overseeing this investment, and it went bad. And it was this passage that Dad went to that concerned him so much. I'm in 1 Timothy 5 and verse 8. If anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for his immediate family, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. You know, Dad had lost a significant amount of money in this investment. And he was concerned that it was going to have an influence, an effect on his ability and on his responsibility to take care of his family. Well, things worked out eventually, but I always remembered that lesson from Dad. We are commanded to provide for our families, and that does require money in our culture. But we are to work, and let me say this, we are also to work and to make provisions for our futures. Consider, if you will, from Proverbs chapter 6, and beginning at verse 6, the story of the ant. Go to the ant, you sluggard, and consider his ways and be wise. That's a pretty strong term there, sluggard. Now he's talking about somebody who's too lazy to work, who just wants to sit around and, you know, maybe watch the Kansas City Chiefs on a Sunday afternoon and not do anything. I'm sorry, Dave, that was a cheap shot. He's got a Kansas City Chief tie on today. And it's distracting. No, brother, it's not. You sluggard. What a strong word. Consider the ant, its ways, and be wise. It has no commander, no overseer, or ruler, yet it stores up its provisions in summer and gathers its food in the harvest. You remember the movie they made about this? It's called Ant. Now there's two movies you got to watch. If you're in class today, you got to go watch The War Wagon and Ant. Two good movies to watch. But if the principle here is that, again, we do have a responsibility to think about our future, to lay aside for it, and to take care of it. And one of the ways that we might do that is through savings, through investing, that be, you know, having an employment that provides, pension. There you go, a pension, those kinds of things. 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 17 is another passage, though. God has given us all these things for the purpose of for us to be able to enjoy these things. And I believe this point is made in 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 17. Command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, not to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. You know, it's not the possessions themselves, but it's about our attitude towards those possessions, towards that stuff, towards those things, towards, more specifically, I think, as Jesus shares the lesson here, towards the almighty dollar. Jesus is telling us not to long after earthly things because they are temporary. And we need to realize, I think it's difficult for us. When you think about these earthly things, these are things that we can touch and that we can handle and things that we possess. And for many of us, you know, that's very important. I know in my house there are a lot of things in that house that I don't need. And there are a lot of things that are important. And some of those things, they might not be so important because they're worth a lot of money, but they're important because they were something that maybe a father or mother had possessed, or a grandparent or something like that, those family heirlooms and those different things like that. And Kathy and I were reminded the other day, about a week and a half ago, we had a major fire there in Independence, and our neighbor behind us lost their house. Completely destroyed, burned down. And as we stood there with our neighbors, consoling Joe and his wife on their losses, and realizing they had no opportunity to get anything out of the house, it's all gone. Kathy was reminded, as I shared this morning, what her mother often said about things like that. You know, it really doesn't matter, as Nellie would say, because they're just all going to burn in the big bonfire at the end of time anyways. And you know, she's absolutely right. But it, sometimes I think it takes being close to a situation like that where you see everybody lose something or you yourself lose it, as some of you have experienced some of those tragedies in your life where you've lost precious possessions. And as we talked about this morning in class, I think we need to keep this in mind too, is sometimes those precious possessions that we lose are each other, loved ones that have gone on before us. And we need to think about that too. And maybe how that can affect or influence the kind of relationship that we have with God. Because that's what Jesus is talking about here. He's talking about obstacles to our relationship with the Father. And basically he's telling us is that there isn't anything valuable enough to be more important than our relationship with God. A teacher gave her students an essay assignment, and the writing prompt was this: what would I do if I had $1 million? Well, the first essay that she wrote was written by one of the girls in her class, and the girl went on and on hoping that she could get an additional $100,000. You know, isn't that so often our attitude? We get $1 million and we still want more. And unfortunately, that too often is our attitude. We're often like that little girl in that essay assignment, wanting more and more and more. What about you? The question I ask myself is, am I laying up for myself treasures in heaven or treasures on earth? In verse 20, Jesus is very specific. We are to lay up for ourselves treasures in heaven. Treasures in heaven refers to whatever is of good and eternal significance. Good and eternal significance that comes out of what is done here on earth. And I think more specifically, as we talked about this morning in our class, if we just keep it in the context of the Sermon on the Mount and look at the things that Jesus was talking about here, talking about the importance of our relationships with each other, talking about putting first things first, prayer and taking care of the needy and fasting, and look at all the Beatitudes, the type of attitude that we are supposed to have, the type of character we are supposed to take on, if you will, as God's children. These are the things that we need to be working on. This is what Jesus is talking about when he says to lay up treasures in heaven. Throughout the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus talks about our having a reward in heaven. But in this sermon, he never really specifies what that reward might be. I think we can easily figure that out and easily conclude that. But I want to share with you some passages from the book of Revelation that helps us to see, to have a better understanding of this reward that Jesus is talking about. How we are rewarded, if you will, when we lay up those treasures in heaven. In Revelation chapter 2 and verse 7, we read, "He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. To him who overcomes, I will give the right to eat from the tree of life, which is in the paradise of God." Another reward that I think Jesus is drawing our attention to is found in verse 11 of Revelation chapter 2. "He who has an ear, again, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. He who overcomes will not be hurt at all by the second death." Now notice one of the things that he's saying here, "he who overcomes." I believe we need to understand that Jesus is saying to us, when we store up for ourselves treasures on earth, we will not be characterized as those people who overcome. But we will be characterized as those people who have been overcome. Who have been overcome by money and greed and possession and materialism. Another passage from the book of Revelation that I think helps us to understand this reward that God is so excited about giving to us is found in chapter 3, verse 5, and also verse 21. Verse 5 says, "He who overcomes will, like them, be dressed in white. I will never erase his name from the book of life, but will acknowledge his name before my Father and his angels." Can you imagine that? How many of you had a guest registry at your wedding or a significant event in your life, maybe a graduation or something like that? Maybe that's not as popular as I thought. Oh, you probably all did. You guys don't remember it. But there was probably a registry there that people signed. Well, go and dig that out and look at that. Those are kind of fun to look at years later. And to look at who shared those special moments in your life. Maybe you forgot about. Oh, yeah, they were there. And, you know, they drove all the way up from Florida to be there at this special time. And it's just kind of a nice little trip down memory lane. But how even more precious is that to think that in God's special book, your name is written there. And that name gets written there through our obedience to the gospel. That's when we register our name in God's book. And again, as I mentioned, verse 21 in Revelation chapter 3. To him who overcomes, I will give the right to sit with me on my throne, just as I overcame and sat down with my Father on his throne. You get to sit at the adult table in heaven. You don't have to sit at the kids' table anymore. Now, for those of you who ever had to sit at the kids' table, that means something to you. The idea here is that if we live righteously, God will bless us as his children. But more than that, he will reward us. One man, and I don't know who to give the credit to for this statement, said this: the great use of a life is to spend it for something that outlasts it. I really like that statement. The great use of a life is to spend it for something that outlasts it. Now, I should have wrote this down, let's see if I remembered it. The founder of Apple, Steve Jobs, is that correct? Just passed away. Don't know if you've heard that in the news. And I have just been amazed at what he accomplished in his life. And I would draw your attention to look up his graduation speech, I guess, for lack of a better term, that he made to Stanford about a year after he was diagnosed with a cancer that killed him. It's amazing. It's amazing. Worth listening to. But you know, when you think about this, I mean, this is a man who did this. He lived his life, and everything that he accomplished is going to outlast him. But as great as Apple computers are, and iPads, and iTouches, and iPhones, and all these things that we credit him with are, none of them are eternal. None of them are eternal. And we need to ask ourselves, are we using our life for something that will outlast it? You know, I'm the kind of person where, you know, legacy is important to me. I was named after my grandfather, Rudy William Hamister, and I'm very proud of that. But my grandfather died when my father was 12 years old, and so I never had the opportunity to meet him. But I've lived all of my, especially my adult life, thinking about this name that I have and this man that I represent, and hoping that if my grandfather would have known me, that I would have made him proud, that he would be proud of the man that I have become. And I think about that a lot. I would want him to be proud. But as important as that is to me, do I ever think about the life that I'm living making God proud? Is God proud of the man that I am today? Is God proud of the things that I represent and the things that I say? And I think Jesus would say to me, he absolutely is. If you are one who lives his life and puts treasures in heaven where moth and rust will not destroy and where thieves cannot break in and steal. Jesus said that we should lay these treasures up in heaven because their moth and rust and thieves do not take away, cannot take away our treasures. These heavenly treasures endure. They do not decay with the passing of time. And this is mentioned by other biblical authors. Peter, for example, 1 Peter 1:4. And into an inheritance that can never perish, spoil, or fade, he writes. This inheritance is kept for you in heaven. Have you received that inheritance yet? You see, that at that time, when your name is written in the Lamb's Book of Life, you also receive a legal right to an inheritance that cannot be taken away from you, because as Peter reminds us, as Jesus has been telling us in the Sermon on the Mount, it is laid up in heaven where it cannot be taken away from you. And the legal right that you have as a child of God, given to you through the sacrifice of His Son and connected to you, to us, through our obedience to the gospel, makes it something that cannot be taken away, that cannot be destroyed, that cannot be lost. Paul reminds us of this as well in 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 18. He says, so we fix our eyes, we focus not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. Since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. Again, what is it that we focus on? What is it that we adore? What is it that we look on with longing eyes and think, wow, that's nice. That's cool. I want that. You know, yesterday we took a boat ride. Kathy, if you might be wondering why she isn't sitting with me, it's not because we got into a fight or anything like that. But Keelan is on his way back to Nebraska. We've had him this last week. And so we got the boat out yesterday. Keelan always enjoyed going for a boat ride. And we're out there having some great family time. And Caleb was adventurous and put on the wetsuit and jumped out. And we pulled him around in the tube a little bit in that chilly October water. But in the midst of all that, an eagle spent about 10 minutes above us, just soaring in the sky. And we slowed the boat down so we could just sit there and float around there in the Wapsie and watch that eagle. And it was at that moment where you just kind of feel like, thanks, God. Thanks for reminding us that what was important about that day and about that moment wasn't having a boat so that we could get out there and have some fun in the water, but it was about our time together as a family and thinking about, and when I say as a family, thinking about that we are God's family. That's why men are without an excuse, because eagles fly over all of us all the time in Iowa. But do you always notice it? Where's your heart? Where's your treasure? I know, I miss it sometimes too. Where are our hearts? Wherever our hearts are, Jesus says, there will be our treasure as well. Jesus' point is that the things we most highly value occupy the heart, the seat, if you will, of our intellect. The very, I think, definition of what we are as people. The things of heaven, not the things of earth, need to occupy that special place in us and need to define truly who we are. And you know what they do? They do. Whether you like it or not, they do. And so consider carefully what you harbor in that special place that Jesus is referring to as our heart. Where is your heart? Is it set on the things of the world? Getting ahead at work, at regardless of the cost or the consequences to your family? Is it set on selfishly accumulating wealth and things, seeking prestige and honor? Is our heart set on things of heaven? Attempting to please God in all that we do and all that we say, looking forward to the reward that God has promised us to spend in eternity with Him in heaven? In Luke chapter 16, we find the story of Lazarus and the rich man. Luke 16, verses 19 through 31 there. And a man shares this story with his son. And you remember the story. This is where the rich man is described to us as being set at the gate of a fine estate. And inside that state was a rich man who had it all. I mean, he wanted for nothing. And this beggar every day was set at that gate, and he just hoped that maybe a little of the trash would come his way that day to fill his hungry stomach. One of the things that's described for us in Luke 16 is that this man found comfort in the dogs licking his sores. You know, he had a miserable life. He had a miserable life. But the story goes on there in Luke 16 to tell us about these two gentlemen's lives after they're leaving this world. And we are told very specifically that the rich man goes to hell. And he's suffering there, longing for just a drop of water to cool his hot, dry tongue, is the picture we get there. And he notices across the way that this beggar, and kind of interesting, he recognizes this beggar, it would appear. He recognizes this man who lived his life in want outside his gate, and yet never did anything about it. And he asked to be comforted, this rich man. He asked to be comforted. And of course the answer was, you received your blessings while you lived in the luxury that you worked so hard to attain. Or maybe he didn't, but the luxury that he certainly had. And this man suffered, and now is his time to be comforted. The terrible thing about this story is this father shares this with his son to try to make a point to his son about the kind of life that we need to be living and the kind of future, the eternal future, we really need to be looking forward to. You know, so often when we think about that and we think about planning for the future, you know, we think about retirement, when we ought to be thinking about eternity. And so the father finished sharing this story from Luke 16 with his son, and hoping to make the point, he asked his son, "So which man would you rather be?" And the son replied, unfortunately, the answer I think too many of us would reply with, "Well, Dad, I'd like to be the rich man here on earth and Lazarus when I die." How often we try to live in two different worlds. Things just don't work out like that, do they? And we need to realize it depends on how we have lived this life has a whole bunch to do with how we will live the next life. Where is your heart? Where is your treasure? Do you need to come and give your heart to Jesus? Do you need to maybe withdraw from one place you've deposited those things that are important to you and make a deposit in heaven like Jesus is asking us to do today? I often find myself asking questions about why. And I think we all do. It's the big question. Why, you know, am I here? Why do I live at this time? And those kinds of questions, you know, trying to have a better understanding of my identity, our identity as human beings. And I think part of the answer to that question, and maybe a big part of the answer to that question, is simply this. Life, which really equates to time, has been given to you, to us, to me, by God for one thing, and maybe one thing only, and that's simply to make a choice. To choose God. To choose to love God. To choose to respond to a God that loves me. And this morning I simply extend the invitation with this question. Have you made the right choice yet? If you need to make the right choice this morning, and if there's any way that we can help you, Won't you come while together we stand and sing our song of encouragement?